Drop one of these beds and see how it's done.
I don't know. No comment. I haven't gotten the start sign yet, but right now it looks like it's about 3:05 on my watch, and 3 o'clock is the start time, right? Okay. Generally, by the last day of the conference, the podiums are getting messy. The start signs come in later and later in the back of the room, but it's time to go. It's 3 o'clock. And this is a presentation that at one time was Model Glue Action Packs by Rob Gonda. I'm pretty obviously not Rob Gonda. The hair is a bit of a giveaway. And the presentation... Thanks. The presentation... Already there. The presentation, well, it was going to be building reusable Model Glue applications, but that's changed too. This is Model Glue 2, built to last. We are going to be covering reusable applications, but in reality, that came to be down to be like a 10-minute topic. So I figured there's a lot more useful information just about the new architecture of Model Glue that I could get across. So what happened for all this? A few weeks ago, I got a phone call from Michael Smith saying, hey, Rob Gonda's not coming. He can't do his presentation. Can you do his presentation? And I said yes, and then remembered that I had just started a new company working on Model Glue. I was traveling, writing proposals, just starting a project. So yeah, I had plenty of spare time to do this. But anyhow, what confused me a bit is Model Glue, or Rob Gonda, not Model Glue, Rob is going to be presenting on something called an action pack, which is something I had put out in quotes and used as the name of a new folder once in a subversion repository when I didn't have a better word handy. So it doesn't really have a definition, it doesn't have a structure, so I was curious as to how he was going to talk about it for an hour. So I figured out how to talk about it for an hour, and I wrote this presentation about it, and I came and I rehearsed it a few times. I was ready to give it today. And I'm a bit manic about presenting. I'll usually give something 6 or 7 times before it's on a screen in front of people. So yesterday morning after Michael's keynote, I did something kind of weird. I went up to my room to rehearse my 2 presentations. I did the action pack presentation, and I was like, this is the most boring thing. I mean, I'm giving it, and I'm kind of starting to nod off. So I don't want to talk about this in front of 50 people. There's only so much I can say about include template equals some other XML file. Not a very long topic. So it went in the trash can. I've only gone through this whole presentation twice now. I've written it all in about the past 30 hours. It's been a long 30 hours, because I've also written some code we'll be seeing today. Don't worry, I've still been through it a few times. What we're going to be talking about are changes in the inner workings of Model Glue from 1.0 to 2.0. We're going to be talking about what they are, why and how they got there, how you can use them to your advantage, and how they're going to allow Model Glue to change as the industry and our jobs change to suit needs down the road. Suddenly I'm going backwards in my presentation. That's not quite right. So what are some of these changes? The first one I'm going to talk about is that action pack topic, compressed from 50 slides down to about 5. So, yes, saving a lot of people's time there. So we can talk about cold spring, which is a topic I like so much I didn't even realize I put an exclamation point in here. But yeah, I like me some cold spring. ORM integration. That's the object relational mapping frameworks, like Transfer and Reactor. We're going to talk about how that came to be in the framework at all, and how it's implemented. It's not just the scaffolding bits. You can mix and match all the pieces of that stack to your heart's content. And then we're going to talk about scaffold generation, how scaffolds are there, and how, while they're still not meant to be permanent parts of your application, you can change them either on an entire framework basis or just for your application to get some better looking prototypes suiting your design standards to meet your client's needs. This is a somewhat advanced session on Model Glue. We're going to be looking at some of those moving parts under the hood. We're going to be going beyond event equals something and beyond Model Glue XML. We're going to be delving into the Model Glue library itself. All those files that I tell people not to change, we're going to change a few of them and see what happens. And then I'm going to assume you have some knowledge of working in Model Glue or Mach 2. I'm not going to explain that event handlers are pages and things like that. I'm going to be a little less introductory, and I'm probably a little more relaxed than I usually am giving presentations. It's a little more casual today. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is this concept of action packs. One thing that was kind of a problem with Model Glue 1 is as you wrote an application, your Model Glue XML file started off about like this, it got to be about like this, then it got to be like this, unless you were using like Oxygen or XML Buddy or a really good XML editor, you were shortly up the creek. But one thing that it also quite didn't allow people to do is modularize their applications in a way where an application could be provided almost on an ASP basis. Take this whole set of functionality that's an online store or a message board and just include it in this application for a client. I've got it written, it's off the shelf. So what we're going to look at is how a new tag called include, that's just a child of the model glue tag, just includes another file that's in the model glue XML format. What really made this possible was taking that config block out of modelglue.xml and putting it in ColdSpring. The separation of your application's configuration from the workflow and the pages in your application means that we can just take all these collections of pages and functionality and mix and match them to make bigger applications. It would have been hard to really discuss this topic for an hour. It is an include tag. It does what an include tag does. Let's go ahead, though, and take a look at a bit of how that works. There's an application that comes with a Model Glue 2 and the current build of it. It's called Widget Central. It's a demonstration of how to scaffold quickly. You've got a list of widgets. You can go manage your widgets. A list of widget types and a list of widget categories. There's a one-to-many relationship between types and widgets and a many-to-many between widgets and categories. What that means is if I edit a widget here, foo, if I edit and don't try viewing it, there we go. I can see the name of foo, what type it is, and I get a drop down, what categories it belongs to, and I get a checkbox. I didn't write any code to do this. This is just pure scaffolds out of the box with Model Glue. Now, I've also written this other little bit of functionality that's a classic Hello World example. It's just a form you type your name into, hit enter, it says, Hi Joe, or Hi Bob. That's living in a different file altogether, this thing called Hello World Events. So it's a Model Glue XML format file. It starts with Model Glue, has event handlers, has the single event handler. I may want to use this in multiple applications. And now, well, I can really quickly. Inside of this Widget Central application, get my mouse back from the Mighty Mouse over there, include template, mg2built is the directory I'm working in, config, hello world events. Reload my app. I should have this new event called Hello World. So I've got functionality that's been defined outside of my core application that I just mixed into my application using an include tag. Type something, hit go, reflects the name back to me. And I could go use this in any Model Glue application that I've already got written. Even if it's a Model Glue 1 core application, and you're running the Model Glue 2 version, you can start mixing functionality back into it because it is reverse compatible. Now, one thing that we kind of ran into when we were talking about doing all this is how to handle a few things in terms of packaging up action packs. It's okay to have just those event handlers there, but those event handlers will typically have some views associated with them. If I've written a message board, it's likely to have 40 or 50 view scripts. So I kind of hit this brick wall for a bit of, if the configuration is completely separated from Model Glue XML, how am I going to tell my applications to go look in this other view directory now to get all of those central views for the message boards? And you can go do it by editing your application's ColdSpring XML file, but it's a little ugly. And then I was talking to Doug about it, and he reminded me that that old setting tag in Model Glue XML, if you defined like multiple sets of view mappings, instead of replacing your existing view mappings, it just started appending. So the problem was actually already solved. If I wanted to make my message board so that I could store a bunch of central views and then tell that that message board to into whatever application it's being included inside of, append its sort of mapping for views, I could just use setting, view mapping, and then that directory to go to. So I could really start to package up these extra functionalities in a way where even the views would be in that package, but if I had a view I wanted to modify for the client, I could copy it to that specific client's directory and edit it, and it would override that base view. So we've got this really nice bundling of both functionality and the ability to customize in a big hurry. Now, I'm sorry if I blew through that kind of fast and how to modify views, but it's because Yesterday, I was giving an Ajax presentation, and we talked a bit about how quickly we might be able to wrap up some like XML remoting capabilities in Model Glue for Ajax purposes. So Ray and I got together again this morning. We talked for a bit. He told me a bit about Spry, and I told him a bit about Model Glue. And I actually went out, and I wrote an action pack between lunch and now to handle some of these things. Okay, let's get out of there. Action pack's out, done. I can go do this other include of something else I've written. Include, template. This is under Model Glue now. Action packs. I called it remote and remoteoperation.xml. So one thing with Spry that would be really neat is just to be able to tell Model Glue really quickly, give me a list of all the records in the database for a given table, but give it to me in XML format so I can tell Spry just to bind to it. So I kind of tried to go out and write all that functionality, bundle it up and package it, so I can include it in any application that's using either a Reactor or a transfer to make this capable. Now, if I go back to my application, I want to start looking at a list of widgets. Localhost, MG2 built. I can do what's called a new event that's been defined inside of that include called remote.xml operation. And the type for this is going to be a list. And I want to list some things from the widget table, so object equal widget. Oh, the file I'm trying to include isn't quite there. Oh yeah, I forgot one thing in that tag. remote/config. And I've got this XML list of everything in the table coming back. I didn't have to write any functionality in this application. This is just an add-on to Model Glue. That's an include tag. If I want to get into it and really start messing with it, start a new tab. I can take a look at this one. It's widget ID 93. I can say in my URL, and widget ID equal 93, and name. I'm going to give it a blank name, and tell it that instead of listing, try to commit this. And it's going to go perform all the validation on that. It's the same validation messages you'd see on the normal scaffolded front end, but it's returning it in XML. So you can now use Spry to do Ajax really quickly in your Model Glue applications that are using the transfer or Reactor ORMs. So it's not just things like message boards, but actual some add-ons to the frameworks itself and additional functionality that's really quick. So should I look at releasing this as an action pack or anything for Ajax? I'll do that in the next few days. But that was the past 2 hours of work. And part of that was, have you used 2xml.cfc from Ray? There's a new version of that coming out, too, that'll do deep objects because it wasn't recursive. If you had a struct of arrays, it would just fail. So now it's just 2xml.2xml and takes anything. So yeah, action packs are fun, but they're not everything I wanted to talk about today. It would have been hard to stretch this topic out for an hour. So I wanted to get into a little bit of the underpinnings of Model Glue in this presentation, and especially this topic called rewriting Model Glue with Cold Spring. Cold Spring, in terms of frameworks, really is my best friend. We're graced with the presence of one of its authors here in the back. Chris is sitting stonily-faced looking at me for mentioning him. Is anybody here using Cold Spring? Show of hands. Okay, do you like it? Is it good? Okay, yeah. It is. It's one of the best things ever. I mean, Spring... what's the name of the guy who made the quote that he got taped saying? As a guy who's like a computer scientist who's been around forever and he didn't realize he was on tape, and he's like, yeah, Spring's just the best thing that's happening to programming in the past 20 years. And it really is. It makes object-oriented programming kind of bearable. If we were writing OO Cold Fusion applications and we were doing something very data-centric, we wanted to create a data access object that was focused on a database, obviously, and required a data source instance. To create everything, we'd have to start writing a bunch of code. We'd say cfset data source is create object component, create my data source. Cfset data source, set data source name from some configuration object, get my current data source name. Cfset DAO is create object, flugelhorn DAO, and init it with the data source. And we have to write all this fragile, scripted way just to instantiate objects. Under Cold Spring, the first thing that's really beautiful is you can say cfset DAO, magical configuration framework, get and configure flugelhorn DAO. Now, that's not the Cold Spring name. That's not what Cold Spring calls the method. That's kind of what it's doing. It's getting something and making sure it's properly configured and all of its dependencies
are just injected on the fly and resolved before it hands it back to you.
Now, this, on one level, it saves a lot of code, but what's really beautiful about it is that it forces you to think of your code in terms of interfaces, not implementations. That last line of code where I used the magical configuration framework, I just asked it for something that could behave as a Flugelhorn DAO. I didn't ask it for com, my app, data, Oracle, Flugelhorn DAO, like a DAO just meant for dealing with Oracle. And I didn't ask it specifically for the CFC stored in com, my app, data, mock, fake Flugelhorn DAO. My application's completely blind to it. They share the same interface. It doesn't matter where these things come from. So where this hit where the rubber hit the road with this was where I saw Chris start to rewrite Model Glue in Java. There is a running version of Model Glue 1 implemented in Java, thanks to Chris. And what he did to build the framework is he used Spring to resolve all of its internal dependencies. And once I saw this, I was like, oh, I've said I'm not rewriting Model Glue. I have no intention to write a Model Glue 2. But this would just make my life for ongoing maintenance easier, if nothing else. So I went back and started to rewrite Model Glue using ColdSpring. On a really practical level, what does this mean? Well, in Model Glue 1, there was this thing called the State Builder CFC. It was a component that was responsible for literally merging the form scope and the URL scope. And inside of each request to Model Glue, it said, Model Glue, create an object, and that object is stored in modelglue.core.statebuilder. But pretty soon, people had problems with the state builder. They wanted to do search engine safe URLs. They didn't just want to use URL parameters, but use like path info from CGI to parse things and do almost some routing out of that. So they wanted to be able to change what file was acting as the state builder. And it did get tacked onto the side, but that was really kind of quite ugly. Inside of Model Glue now, with the new ColdSpring core, there's this default configuration that configures things like the default state builder to use. It's an XML file. It's really only like 150 lines long, called configuration.xml. What's kind of nifty about this is if you alter that central configuration.xml file, you're changing the behavior of every Model Glue application on that server. That might not be what you want. But say you have one client who needs a special set of routing tools in their configuration of Model Glue, you can make a copy of configuration.xml and point just that application to it. And that application is going to get its custom configured version of Model Glue. So I know AboutWeb has modified Model Glue to meet some of their needs, but they've kind of had to rewrite part of the core of 1.1. And when they go to do an application that's supposed to behave as a normal Model Glue application, it has to run on a physically separate server. By moving to interface-driven architecture for it and using something like ColdSpring to resolve all the problems, they just don't have to. They could write a separate configuration file and tell Model Glue to run under that separate configuration. Yes?
So you would copy the whole configuration file and just modify the parts you want?
You could. You could also include an additional file that overwrote things. You could use... Yeah, that's probably not quite the best way to do it. I mean, you could fragment it out and use the new, is it include inside of the bean XML? There's ways to do includes now inside of ColdSpring. You could use parent bean factories to do it. There's a couple different ways, but just copying it and repointing is probably the simplest. It does have the problem if I start adding new beans to ColdSpring or to Model Glue, you won't have those showing up. So let's try this out a little bit. I wanted to show how we can actually go modify the core state builder to change some of the behavior of merging the form and the URL scopes. And in particular, I wanted to change the state builder so that whenever it started up, just in that debugging log at the bottom of every Model Glue page, when debugging's turned on, shows the current time and date that this event is running. The state builder itself is part of the Model Glue package. Model Glue. My directory structure looks a little different because this is the unbuilt version from Subversion. This is a folder called StateBuilder. StateBuilder.cfc. Yeah, there it is. It's got a couple different things like create state container and create request log. Create state container does some things like merging URL and form into order specified, as well as, I mean, this is where myself comes from. I mean, not me personally, but that value name myself. ColdSpring can't create developers yet, but it's kind of getting there. So I'd like to start using a custom version of this. I'm going to use an application-specific one. So I'm going to copy it into this temp directory here under my model glue built to last folder. Oh, no, I can't just paste text in there and have it know I want to create a file. I'm going to call it state builder too. I'll paste everything in, and I'm going to go up to the top and tell it to extend that one in the core. I am the state builder. It's a bit ominous. Extends model glue dot unity dot state builder dot state builder. Okay, now I don't want to override every function on this. I just want to monkey with a couple of them. So I'm going to get rid of the constructor and set framework and git config setting. I just hit eject, and I'm not too sure what's about to pop out of my laptop here. Okay, so I've got create state container going. Documentary about the Tour de France. Yep, I can go. And instead of trying to do this completely properly and using super and things like that, I'm just going to change some of the behavior right here so we all see the point quickly. I can change myself here to thyself if I really wanted to. It's probably more grammatically correct, but myself is what Fusebox uses. And then here in the request log, I have this part that adds the using ORM adapter line and the what version of model glue you're using lines that we're kind of used to seeing. And I'll add on to that a little bit. Core. This mouse is just getting pointless on these podiums. For a message, I'll just go ahead and send out now. Okay, so I've customized my state builder, but now I want to customize this overall configuration of model glue, special just to this application. Let's go take a look at configuration.xml. It's actually not all that bad or all that big. It says, this is the model glue framework definition. What follows is low-level plumbing for model glue. You shouldn't be messing with this unless you've looked at the interfaces and you understand what you're about to do. I mean, in here we have, this is model glue itself. At one point, the framework loader asks ColdSpring to assemble model glue and return it. So the ColdSpring and Chili Beans adapter, so I can support both of those still. ORM stuff. And down here we have this bean called State Builder. And that's the one we're kind of after. I'm going to make a local copy of my configuration. And paste this stuff into it. And go look for that State Builder. Okay. Let's change this to MG2 built. .temp.stateBuilder, and that's my local one. Now, what we need to look at doing is how we tell model glue to use our custom configuration for the entire framework. This is kind of a low-level bootstrapping issue for the framework. I mean, if I haven't loaded the configuration yet, how can I ask a configuration value where to find the configuration file? It would have to run in some circles. Now, in the index.cfm of your applications, and people have run through this, and sometimes people aren't too sure what these things are doing, there's a couple low-level variables you can set about model glue, such as what name to call it in the application scope, sort of where to find the local configuration, that local coldspring.xml file that's in the application template, where to find its scaffolding configuration. And the one that we're concerned about is the core configuration for the model glue framework itself. Can you all hear me okay when I step back from the podium? Because it sounds a lot louder when I get closer. Okay. So in this case, I no longer want to load it from the model glue directory itself. Instead, I want to load my custom here. I'm going to go back and reload my app. It's going to look, find this new configuration, find that new state builder that was the subclass I created, load it up instead of the core one, and there's my new line showing up on debugging trace. And I'm glad this code that I haven't rehearsed 40 times is actually working. It's a nice comfort off the bat. Okay, so we've just created what we could almost call a custom version of model glue that changes some core behavior, but we've done it without changing core code. Okay, so by moving model glue away from inside of the framework always saying model glue dot core dot whatever I need to create now, and over to magical configuration framework dot go get this for me, because even model glue doesn't call it ColdSpring or bind too closely to ColdSpring itself. It could use a different inversion of control container or get rid of it entirely if it wanted to. I can now allow both myself and everybody else to change the framework and to take it forward and to meet your own needs better without having to alter core configuration files or fork too badly or make it harder for you to upgrade frameworks later on. But one of those best things about writing ColdSpring applications, and I just touched on this a bit, is ColdSpring's kind of like a weird Zen framework when you're talking about inversion of control, is that ColdSpring applications are great in that they're not ColdSpring applications. Nothing in your application, except a little bit that loads ColdSpring, maybe an application.cfm, needs to know anything about the existence of ColdSpring. It's perfectly possible to create and run a ModelGlue 2.0 application without ColdSpring at all, or without XML. You could even define your event handlers and controllers in a database, write your own framework loader that uses the database, and then plug it in using that configuration file. I'm dealing with two people right now who actually, they do that. They have a web-driven tool that lets them build out their ModelGlue applications through a browser-based interface, saving everything back to the database. It's kind of slick. I wish they'd open source this stuff, but they're holding on to it. Okay, moving along from ColdSpring, I wanted to get into this how object relational mapping integration bit happened inside the framework. There's been a bit of confusion over what this is. It's not built into the framework. It's not part of the framework. It's just a service that if you choose to make it available, the framework can take advantage of and make it easier to interact with. Okay, most of us have seen like the blog in whatever demo where I try to panic and write a blog in about 10 minutes and sometimes get gtalk integrated and things like that. Chris says he's going to do it in 2 minutes now with Hibernate and Java, so I want to see the YouTube video for this. We're going to see who talks faster. That's not at all what I'm talking about today with ORM integration. We're not going to go through a speedy demo like that. I'm not going to show scaffolding or how to change scaffolds. Instead, we're going to talk about how ORM integration evolved and how it wound up in the framework to begin with, or as something the framework can use. Also, we're going to look at its structure and how you can take advantage of the different tiers inside of that ORM integration services and how you can change its functionality. So before I used ORM frameworks, I was one of those people that followed the DAO Bean Gateway pattern. Do we have DAO Bean Gateway people in here? Anyone? Yeah, we know who we are. Our lives consist of writing widget bean, widget DAO, widget gateway, widget service, and widget controller to edit the widget table. And then for the gadget table, we write the gadget bean, gadget DAO, gadget gateway, and it goes on down the line. It can be a bit of a repetitive existence when you're dealing with the CRUD and the basic side of your application. I mean, that seems to be just writing the admin side to a lot of applications, but it takes up so much time, the real functionality users want sometimes gets lost in the process. So as I started using object relational mapping frameworks to take care of the bean, the DAO, the gateway, and sometimes that overall CRUD and list service, my apps were still kind of repetitive. I mean, a lot of the classes were generated for me, but I still had controllers that typically varied only with a few syllables in front of the word controller in their class name. I'd have a widget controller that would probably have methods like create, read, update, delete, list, and it would take values from the URL that are kind of predictable, like read, find widget ID in the URL, and then ask Reactor or transfer to read widget ID, whatever. So I did what most developers do. I saw repetitive code happening that could be parameterized. And I said, I'm not writing all this stuff anymore. I'm going to make these things variables. That's what we do for a living. I'm going to put it in one place. So I created my first ORM controller, where all these things like list, read, update, delete, and commit, of course, I could just pass it what I was currently working with and some information about how I wanted to get that back, like the criteria or maybe what method to run on the actual gateway doing the list. And its listener functions received the name of the table now instead of being hard-coded. I had one parameterized. I could just pass it along. And that's how the ORM controller and this idea of sort of generic database messages were really born inside of ModelGlue. But my implementation of it at first was kind of weak. I had this track ticket that I left around for a long time from Sean Corfield saying, you've almost made this generic. You can almost use transfer with all of this. And it had like 3 exclamation points after it. I got a phone call, an instant message. So we talked for a while about how to get this in, and we decided on using an adapter pattern. Adapter is when you have maybe a couple different classes that perform almost the same functionality but have different APIs, but you need them to look the same to the outside world. So you declare your own interface and write sort of class-specific implementations of that interface. It's an adapter or duct tape or a bit of chewing gum stuck onto the side of something to make it look the same to the outside world. So the idea of the ORM adapter was born. And really, inside of Model Glue, there's two ORM adapters that come with it, one for transfer and one for a reactor. That's the only part of the whole framework that knows anything about those other two frameworks. They're optional. You put them in or you leave them out as you want. Instead of calling a reactor directly now from this ORM controller, I had a truly generic ORM controller. That's actually the name of the class. And it just talks to the abstract ORM adapter interface and says what it would like to do. Do you want to list something? Do you want to delete something? And because that abstract ORM adapter defined an interface, and Model Glue 2 by default uses ColdSpring, which is all about interface-driven design and swapping things out, I could suddenly change which ORM framework I was using by changing XML and writing a new adapter. And recently we've really put this to the test. Sean Corfield wrote the beginnings of a transfer adapter that just did basic CRUD and list, and I went back in and added all the relationship stuff to it, as well as some validation, prettier labels on scaffolds and things like that. And now we've got almost near transparent use of reactor or transfer along with the generic database messages and scaffolds. In fact, if you take a look, along with some of the current builds of Model Glue inside of its samples directory, there's this directory called widget. There's two folders underneath that. One's for reactor and one's for transfer. If you look at the transfer implementation, manage widgets, this thing we were just looking at, I've just included its functionality into a couple different applications with that include tag. Manage widgets, I'm going to edit foo widget, change foo to bar, change some of those mini to minis and things like that, change the one to many relationships, which are going to have to be handled in transfer native ways of doing relationships. And then go look at the same thing under reactor. So let's go back and edit. So we see how this looks. Bar, it's in cat 1 of type 1. Oops, having a hard time highlighting now. Under reactor, I can go manage widgets and look at bar. And it looks exactly the same way. The use of those two frameworks is just being completely hidden by the framework now, or by Model Glue now. You can go between the two at will. If somebody ever writes like an actual real Hibernate adapter for Cold Fusion, I'd be all about putting something like that in, or writes a more Hibernate-focused or even more object and less database-focused object relational mapping framework, I'm going to hop to try to implement that in here. Yep. There's one called isActive, and that was something that Doug and I were playing around with to do soft deletes in a big hurry. We'll talk about that in a minute. It showed up higher in the other one. It just reversed the order.
But this one doesn't have an actual field for it?
No, actually, under reactor, there's a problem with doing Boolean fields right now and bit fields. I knocked it out of here in the view because it comes back as a... It doesn't relate it to a Cold Fusion data type because reactor is database-driven rather than sort of object metadata-driven. So it comes back as a bit or a small int or specific to your database type, and you could like type in true there and blow the whole thing up instead of forcing somebody to enter something valid. Okay, yeah, let's see a bit more there. Look, I wanted to actually look at the interface for that adapter so we can see that as new ARMs come along, it should be fairly easy to put them right into Model Glue. This is a directory called ORM, and that's where all the specific stuff is. The abstract ORM adapter itself has some things like get object metadata, which takes the metadata returned by the ORM framework, such as structure and relationships, and turns it both into a format Model Glue understands and XML as well, along with methods like list, new, read, validate, assemble, things like that. Things we want to be able to do in a very generic way without being bound to an ORM framework. So looking at the reactor framework, we can actually look at delete. It's a simple one to look at. And this is where that ORM framework-specific code starts to pop up. I'm going to get a record using the read function that's already in here and what's been passed, and say record.delete. Because in a reactor, anytime you have an instance of a reactor record, it has a delete method that can just be called. But over in transfer, second implementation of the same interface, the delete method just had to work just a touch differently. I have to ask for transfer and then tell transfer to delete that record. So I can just take this difference in syntax and make it look the same to the outside world through using interfaces and then using ColdSpring to wire together my current implementation. Okay, come here, Keynote. And now that last, that big topic that is scaffolding and exactly how scaffolding itself works inside of Model Glue. Because it's a bit understood. It's not this giant brick of code that at runtime creates HTML and sends it out to the screen. It's actually just working like plain old Model Glue event handlers. It's just predicting some things that it wants to have happen along the way. How did scaffolding happen, though? Well, I had this abstract ORM adapter interface, which provided generic database interaction for really conventional CRUD and list type stuff. On top of it, I had this generic ORM controller. It had these generic listeners for like generic list and generic delete. If you look at these from a sort of a different perspective, I've got really something that's acting as a model. It talks to my business tier and says create, read, update, delist, delete. And I've got something acting as a controller. So I've got the first two parts of the, doing scaffolding already implemented in a way that so far is following MVC. So all I needed to do was come up with a way to make the view happen without knowing anything about that ORM adapter, knowing nothing about the model, but just sending all of its data through the controller, like a good MVC app should. So how did this wind up working? When you write an event handler tag in Model Glue XML and Model Glue loads, that tag gets translated into an instance of eventHandler.cfc. It's got some properties that are kind of predictable, like message broadcasts, views, and results. They just keep track of those child tags on there. It's not all just treated at runtime as XML. That would be kind of slow. So traditionally, the XML event handler just read the XML file, looked for event handler tags, and created an event handler for each. Create object component event handler. All scaffolds really are just subclasses of eventHandler.cfc. And instead of using create object directly, there's a really simple factory in place called event handler factory, where you can pass it a type you'd like to create. Its default is just a plain old event handler. But other than that, I can say create me an event handler that is a list scaffold. And that knows to add the special like generic list broadcast at the top and to add the view that says show a list of records for a given table. Lists can, in turn, when they're instantiated, use a utility in the framework to generate their views if the files currently don't exist. Taking a look at this, it's much simpler than it sounds. There's the event handler CFC. It can translate itself to struct or to XML. That's important in other ways inside of Model Glue. But it's got get name, set name, access, whether or not it's extensible, whether it should be treated as a scaffold, messages, adding messages, dealing with that message collection. It's not rocket science. It's a little bean. It's just a bean that doesn't ever get saved to a database or anything like that. It's a bean inside the Model Glue framework. But if you look inside of the scaffold directory, I've got something like list. List here, it says, I am metadata about list scaffolds. I just extend Model Glue Unity event handler. And its constructor, it knows to go along and set its name to whatever it's dealing with, dot list. So if you're wondering how that dot list part happens, it's right here. And add some views. Call my view generator and generate it if it doesn't exist. Set its name to body, set template to file, set append equal true, this kind of stuff. So it just creates the event handler and sticks it on in, and Model Glue doesn't know that that's not a normal event handler. Okay, so how are those views generated? When the abstract ORM adapter defines a method, get object metadata, that describes the object in question, like its properties, its relationships, labels to put on the form fields following a nice camel case convention. Like in your database, if you write like company upper N AME for company name, when you do a scaffold on it, that'll turn into upper C company space upper N AIM. So you just get company name, nicely spaced, following a little bit of convention. This metadata then also has an XML representation that view generator class turns into that view on the fly using an XSL transformation. Okay, taking a look at that. It's under view. View generator. Just has this generate method. The file name of where it should go, the metadata to deal with, and the XSL template. Where does the XSL template come from? It actually comes from the same place that the list of available scaffolds comes from. It's yet another XML configuration file. It's buried down, by default, inside of the framework, and it defines what actual scaffolds are available. It defines that simple factory Vino is talking about, the event handler factory, and it takes a pretty good-sized configuration of the different types of event handlers this factory should be creating. It could be creating just a plain event handler, which says, hey, don't treat it as a scaffold, it's just that bare modelglue.unity event handler, or it could be something like list, which says create that event handler subclass we were just looking at. Tell the framework to treat this as a scaffold. There's a couple special things that go on. In other words, it actually gets compiled to XML and hidden away so it's faster later. But also, here's an array or a list of all the different views that need to get generated for this. Right now, there aren't any scaffolds that require the generation of more than one view. However, you could create a scaffold that needs four or five or as many views as you want to be generated, or you have scaffolds like delete that don't generate any views. What I wanted to do is make sure that it was available and extensible later. And it says what the name of this view should be. So when you do include template equal whatever, name equal foo, that's what it becomes in here, list. Where's the XSL file that generates it? Well, it's there. I'm not going to open the XSL file because I think everybody hates actually looking at XSL files. It's a really brutal way to template things. And what the prefix should be and what the suffix should be. So if I create one of these for something like widget, I get display widget list. That's how those file names happen in that generated directory. Okay, a little bit more about that. Why is that kind of a nice way to set up the scaffolding? It means that you could go in and add new scaffolds. You could change those core XSL files, or just like the core configuration for the framework, if you wanted to do a client-specific set of scaffolds, I don't recommend trying to do it to generate your final application. That's Peter Bell's game. But if they want sort of their header around things, or they want the tables and forms to look a special way, create a copy of scaffoldconfiguration.xml. Is it safe to talk? Thanks. Okay. I was giving a presentation recently for my local Cold Fusion user group, and I'm sitting there in the chair, and something grounded out to the chair while I was sitting in it, and it was in the middle of talking, so I got like I got house current through me while I'm talking, but luckily I wasn't touching the laptop. It was not a fun moment at the podium. I was okay, and I got over it in a minute, but it was a bit shocking. It means that for your clients, if they want to see just the scaffolds looking a special way while you're doing the prototypes for them, you can create a copy of that scaffolding configuration and even create custom scaffolds. Like at one time, we were playing around with a dot master detail scaffold that would show like a iframe scrollable list of things and put the forms on the right. But that was getting kind of ridiculous and trying to generate applications rather than starting code. But you could create custom scaffolds just for one client. But putting together kind of, sure. Oh, if you wanted to change that? The labels are actually generated down in the adapter to the ORM. There's some, because each ORM handles labeling a little bit differently, to create sort of pretty labels coming from the ORM, so you could change that if you want. Trying to think of a better solution for that, and yeah. If you do use Model Glue and you come across something you want changed or something that's a bug, if you could go to track.model-glue.com and submit it as a ticket, using regex is in there is a good one that I should add, so don't space out multiple capital letters. Thanks. If you could add that as a ticket, I'll try to get that committed. But why is this whole approach to doing scaffolds and event handlers and ORM integration this way kind of nice? Well, we've got that MVC stack going here. We've got the model, the controller, and the views, where the views are your pages. What's going to the browser? It's that whole event handler tag, to me, is really kind of the view. It's the view stating what it needs, go off and do a generic list, go off and make sure the user's authenticated, and then render these CFM templates down to HTML, then go include these other bits of the presentation part. Okay, we've got the model here, and it's that generic ORM adapter. When you do a scaffold, it's going through that generic ORM controller to talk to it. But this thing's available all the way through the framework. Recently, I was writing it's a quick user authentication system where you have to do the common thing of type password, confirm password, and I can never type it the same way twice, but it's just because I can't type. And what I needed to do was add some custom form validation. It wasn't validation inside my model. It wasn't object model validation. It was just validating the CRUD coming from the browser. So what I wanted to do was write my own controller just to handle that form posting, do my own validation, but I didn't want to have to go handle saving the record myself. I wanted to say, this is my additional validation, but just go use the generic ORM adapter to save it. So at the time, I didn't know if I was going to be using Reactor or Transport or my own homebrew container that I use sometimes. So I had Foo controller over here that was authenticating that form while I'm blind now, just going to the ORM adapter as well. This is the model. It doesn't know what's talking to it. It doesn't know about the existence of the outside world. So anything on the controller tier can use it. On the view side, scaffolds by default are using that ORM controller for everything. But as I do in demos a lot, if I need to grab a quick list of something when I'm writing demo code, your own event handlers can use it as well. So event handlers can also talk to the generic ORM controller by doing those generic broadcasts. However, they can also kind of use Foo controller, or we were talking about security a minute ago with users and authentication. So I had a scaffold, and it was a scaffolded event handler, but I wanted to add some extra stuff to it. Scaffold is really just kind of event handler tag. It can still have results under it. It can still have broadcasts under it. So I can have scaffolds broadcasting messages that are listened for by things other than that ORM controller. So maybe I have a scaffold around editing all of the categories in my system. I may want those scaffolds to broadcast some messages to make sure somebody's authenticated to do that kind of thing. So I can broadcast message, listen for a result of this person shouldn't be here, and tell the scaffold to bail out long before it gets to doing the generic delete, that person trying to use the URL to do something they shouldn't. And event handlers, of course, this whole right side is the traditional sort of stack. Event handlers can use your controllers by broadcasting messages that have listeners. Yeah, Peter.
Did you ever consider, rather than instead of your own controller, just having a base controller that Foo controller extended to kind of get the same thing? And then you could also overload the list if you wanted for a bit.
So that every controller was an ORM controller?
All of them would extend an ORM controller. You just have a controller on an object basis for an article, for user, for a category. They all extend base or ORM controller so you can overload it or customize it with extras.
No, that's really not quite my thing or my approach to MVC. I don't like to have controllers that are specific to parts of my object model, but have controllers that deal with that pure controller issue of taking all the crap from the browser and figuring out in a way that the model can then understand. So my controllers are typically likely to be more semantically named. I could have a security controller or a message board controller rather than just a message post controller and a blog comment controller and things like that. Okay. You're electrocuted, stages are falling apart. It's a rough day out. So we've got a few minutes left. I've got about 5 minutes before I have to turn it over to question and answer. But I wanted to talk a little bit about hacking Model Glue, how you can kind of have it your way right away. I've got this friend named Doug. He wrote Reactor. He lives across the street from me, so it's an odd time sometimes. Because he skipped town about an hour ago, I'm going to pick on him a little bit. He's a good friend of mine, but sometimes he's one of my largest critics. He has the good taste to do it privately. We just step outside and have coffee. He doesn't slam me on his blog anymore. But a few weeks ago, he asked me for a few new features in Model Glue. And anybody who's asked me for features in Model Glue has probably gotten mad at me because, I mean, I have to be dragged kicking and screaming, not because I don't want to do the work, but because anything I add to Model Glue could affect a couple thousand people. So Doug asked how he could change scaffolds from, he had a couple things. He wanted to change scaffolds from checkboxes to select multiple lists. It wasn't something he wanted me to change for everybody. He was just wondering about this custom configuration stuff and how he could do it. He wanted to do it without modifying the core scaffolding XSL. In fact, he just wanted to do it one-off for a single project. It's a situation we talked about a few minutes ago. I'm not going to go through a whole exercise of doing it. But in that same place we sort of bootstrapped in the alternate core configuration, there's another setting in there where we can tell it to go where to find your scaffolding configuration. So let you know, that may be changing. Where to find scaffolding configuration may just become part of the model glue configuration bean. So you just change it in your coldspring.xml file. Okay, but looking at it, there are some things we could do. We could keep Doug happy and change those selects to, or checkbox arrays to select multiples. We could add a new scaffold altogether. We talked about the factory. We could auto add some Ajax integration. That really quick Ajax demo we did yesterday of deleting things out, that would be a snap to add to the XSL so that every list had this instant delete functionality right behind the scenes by just calling the existing delete event handler, then ignoring the results that come back. Okay, but that Doug, he's really picky sometimes. One of his clients wants him to never, okay, so his clients are picky, never ever delete any, he's picky too, never ever delete any records ever from any table in this application's database. Instead, they have this conventional column called isDeleted that he felt should always just be set to 1 if a given record is deleted. So Doug's been using that generic delete message in the delete scaffolds to delete records from the database. That's really kind of bad news for Doug because they happen to do true deletes. So he came to me and he asked, hey, I was talking to Mark Mandel from the Transfer ORM, sort of his competitor there, and he's added a bit that will let people configure soft deletes inside of the framework. So if it's going into one framework, could it go into your framework? And I did the whole kicking, screaming, whining bit I always do, and I said, I just don't think it's a good idea. I mean, I can add configuration options till I'm blue in the face, and pretty soon we'll have a product or application generator, and I think I want to spend my time writing applications that are really custom and on target. That wasn't a swipe at application generation, seriously. I don't think it's a good idea to try to support everyone's different ways of doing the same thing. Is that called isDeleted or isActive or deleted or what? I could add a configuration variable for that, but in that case, is it a Boolean? Is it a bit? Is it somebody's going 0 or -1? I mean, people do strange things sometimes. So I told Doug no, and then in about 20 minutes, he came back over and said, oh, thanks for saying no. I looked at how ColdSpring and all of this works, because Doug's just starting to really use ColdSpring too. And he had changed the behavior of the framework just for this one application in about 20 minutes and wired it back in. So what exactly did he do? He went over, grabbed the Reactor ORM adapter because Doug just happens to use Reactor. Shock is coming, I can feel it.
That's somebody's cell phone.
I might somewhere. Yeah, I do. Yeah, it is sitting right next to the lavalier. He created a copy of the Reactor adapter, and he called it the Doug adapter. And he changed it a bit. He said, don't go extend that core abstract ORM adapter. Go extend Reactor adapter. He got rid of all the code in it except down and delete. There we go. And where it says record.delete and get that record, he just changed it up a bit. He said cf set record.set is deleted 1 record.save. So delete isn't doing a delete, it's just changing it and saving it. Then he went over to his ColdSpring file. Okay, model glue config for this app. Went into ColdSpring. Went down to his ORM adapter bean, changed it from an alias, and just wired it to his version of the adapter. It took all the behavior that was already there and just changed what he wanted. And soft deleting was implemented in his special way really quickly. Okay, my last one to pick on here, and this isn't Doug bringing this up. I've taken a little bit of flack for relying both on XML and for almost sort of relying on ColdSpring because it's not technically bound to it, but yeah, I rely on ColdSpring pretty heavily to organize model glue. But model glue itself isn't completely bound to XML or to ColdSpring. The reason I do use XML is that I think it forms, and Peter Bell said it well yesterday, a very nice domain-specific language for describing the relationships between user events, like a specific page, and what should be invoked to complete that page's necessities. In Model Glue, I used XML as that default description language. However, CFML makes a perfectly good description language for doing the same thing. I just wanted to show the same thing in action. Over here. And I posted this on my blog last week about what Model Glue can look like with no XML. I've just created an application. I used the template and threw the template away for this one so I could get its CSS and some of its views. And just wrote a whole Model Glue application where instead of using ModelGlue.xml, I'm setting up every event handler and every message broadcast by hand. And it really wasn't all that bad. In terms of number of lines of code, it's not that much longer. I set up the app key. I set up to run in legacy compatibility mode. Just some special things you just can't quite do like this. Create the configuration, tell it to not reload, but go ahead and run in debugging mode. So instead of using the config settings, I'm just setting them directly against the Model Glue configuration right here. Create Model Glue itself, passing its configuration, so it knows where to find everything. Hey, here's that state builder we were talking about. Here's the version I want you to use. Instead of using Cold Spring, I'm going to wire in the class name by hand here, so it might not be quite as maintainable down the road. Create a controller. This really isn't any different from doing it in XML. Create an instance of the controller CFC, add a listserv for onRequestStart that calls controller CFC and calls a function called onRequestStart. That's the message listener tag. It's just got this fluff of CFset around it. Event handlers got kind of ugly. Create a new event handler. Set its name to modelglue.onRequestStart. Go ahead and create an object that's the message. Set its name. Add the message to the event handler. Add the event handler to the framework. So it kept on going for a little while to get everything in place there, to have the full execution stack of the template application. And I was actually kind of shocked. I didn't expect it to actually go ahead and do this, but it worked. So it's not too fun to look at. We can go to blog samples, mgnoxml, and there's the application template running without a Cold Spring file or without a modelglue.xml file. In fact, it even tells you this is the Model Glue version, no XML demonstration. So looking back, that's a kind of wordy way to approach configuring Model Glue, but it's possible. You do the same thing from a database if you wanted to, like we talked about earlier. There's an interface called the event loader. And in this case, there's the XML event loader, which is by default. It's not quite as clean as it should be right now because I've only been doing XML event loading myself. It is a community project. If somebody wants to commit a nicer database event loader, I'd love to see it. But moving on to the conclusion, because I've got about 30 seconds left, Model Glue 2 is built to last because it shifted from a framework that got put together somewhat as it went along to meet needs, to seeing what all those needs are and going back and addressing those needs with the use of an interface-driven architecture. In fact, the framework, at a low level, it really doesn't even trust itself. It trusts contracts that parts of the framework are forced to maintain. This really allows some massive flexibility in what you can do with a framework, retooling to suit your needs, and some great ways to help people in a more ASP manner. The ORM integration, last but not least, it really is take it or leave it. But it still uses that whole stack of MVC plus implicit invocation to sort of be true to how Model Glue works and make its features available to you on a take it or leave it basis. Use the views that scaffolding creates or drop them. Never use scaffolding, but go ahead and use generic lists to get queries when you need them. So thank you all very much. I hope it's been a tour of some of the underbelly of Model Glue. I'm running out of time, but I'd be happy to take questions out in the hallway after we're done. Hope everybody has a great afternoon here at the rest of the conference. Thanks.